Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, The New Talk. Live from the deck tonight. I've dragged everything out to be on the deck tonight because it's just beautiful out here. And I love when it's warm in the early spring because it's too early yet for bugs. I mean, there's a few, but we don't have the early June mosquito thing going on. It's really nice out here. Beautiful day all day today. Sunshine. Heading into May, I think the weather's actually on track to be a pretty hot summer. In fact, my friend Greg Ryan calls it the global warming summer. And he wants you to be ready for it, which is why I'm going to tell you about Ryan Plumbing and Heating and suggest that Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check your AC, make sure your filters are done. A lot of times they got to clean the coils. But here's the thing. It's got to be over 70 for Ryan to come out and check the air conditioning. So, it's great because now I would say we're getting close to, if not over 70, almost every day. So now is the time to make an appointment to make sure that your AC is going to work when it gets hot. And as Greg calls it, you want to be ready for the global warming summer. The other thing is when Ryan comes out to check the AC, also ask them to make sure that you didn't have any broken pipes or other issues left over from winter. If you're remodeling or doing a bathroom, this is a great time because interest rates remain low, which means obviously if you're doing a bathroom, you got plumbing things you need to get done. Ryan is great for that, and they're great for emergency service. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul gets a lot of emergency calls. So all of those things, and by the way, just as an aside, if you're putting in a basement room or a garage or something like that, and you're going to throw down a concrete floor, it's a great time also to talk to them about in-floor heating, which is awesome. I've had it when I was a kid. We had it in one of our houses down in we call it the rec room, but it was the basement of the basically split-level Midwestern house. And I don't think that room would have been usable without the in-floor heat. So it was really great. So it's something to talk to them about. So here's the numbers. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul. And that means the suburbs, too. So Plymouth and St. Louis Park and Mendota. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. Once again, 651-224-4771 or 612-927-6488. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So, in this podcast, what is this? Podcast 362, I think. Podcast 362. Boy, I hope I'm right about that. I hate it when I'm wrong. But after last night, last night's podcast about Baltimore, you know, I'm almost afraid to talk about any other heavy issues. But I've got my coffee here. I'm going to pour myself some. I just had a fabulous dinner of pork chops and eggs and kale salad and broccoli. It was great. And I just made that, and I'm just relaxing. But we're kind of back in a news-rich environment. Certainly Baltimore is a huge topic for a lot of reasons, and it's always fun to do a podcast, say some stuff kind of off the top of your head, and then see most of that stuff fleshed out in the next day's commentary, whether it comes from the Post or the Wall Street Journal or even people on the left basically confirming what I talked about in the previous podcast. But the other big story which is developing is the story on the economy. And, you know, that figured in prominently to the Baltimore situation because conservatives generally blame the things that are happening in Ferguson and Baltimore and with the poor people in this country on no or slow economic growth. You know, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know that that's the reason those things are happening. And I'm not going to devote much time in this podcast to talk about that. But I do want to talk about the economy for a couple of reasons. First of all, I hope the economy gets better, both for my clients as well as the rest of business in America. We had something like 0.2% annual growth in the first quarter of 2015 after everyone said, oh, 2015 is going to be a huge year. So we're already in the hole one quarter in 2015, and generally the baseline growth in this country has been around 2.5% to 2%. That's not enough, and I don't think it's enough to really get momentum with the recovery. And the longer this quote-unquote recovery goes, the more we're due for another kind or another recession in the near future. So this is ominous. And it's important because 2016 is an election year, and it's important because right now people are forming thoughts about the economy and about what needs to be done about it. And I don't see too many people writing, and I'm talking about candidates, writing and talking about what will truly fix the economy. And it's certainly up for debate, but I kind of think we've lost our way on what's an alternative to what we're doing now. And what are we doing right now? Well, we're using the Federal Reserve to stimulate and to destimulate, according to their lights, what's going on with the economy. And we keep thinking that all the things that are quote-unquote being done are going to eventually produce economic growth. That's the, if you had to ask me as a guy who really watches the media and watches especially the financial media in this country, that is the one thing that I see, is that we keep expecting suddenly we're going to have 5, 6, 7% economic growth. And I will just read you a quick paragraph from MarketWatch because it really reflects the confusion about what is causing these problems. The U.S. grew at a meager 0.2% annual pace in the first 3 months of 2015, a period marked by severe weather, as though severe weather never happened again before or and will never happen again, and it never happened during any of the boom periods in our history. A major port dispute, which certainly could have been but may not have been a factor in slowing American growth in the first quarter, and a soaring dollar that curbed American exports. So those are the excuses that you're going to hear. And I think it's really complicated. And I don't know that you can say that those things are causing the problems. Here's another truism that isn't true, in my opinion. Consumer spending, the main engine of growth, not true. We overestimate consumer spending as a percentage of the economy. We are told it is as much as 75% of the economy. You need to know that when they calculate consumer spending, they include all sorts of transfer payments because it's assumed that people spend that money right away. So there's a lot of assumptions going into saying 75% of the economy or 75% or 70% of the economy is consumer spending, and it's the main engine of growth in this country. Some people say consumer spending, if you calculate it differently, is somewhere around 40 to 45% of the economy, conservatively, maybe a little bit more, but it certainly isn't 70% of the economy. But here we get to what I think is the core. Business investment in structures such as mining shafts and wells sank 23.1% in the first quarter, reflecting lower spending by U.S. energy companies seeking to cope with suddenly cheap oil. And then other companies also cut back on investment amid a surge in the dollar that's made U.S. goods and services more expensive to sell outside the nation's border. That's true, but there's some caveats there, which I'm going to tell you about in a second. Then it talks about exports stumbled up 7.2%, while imports edged up 1.8%. A bigger trade deficit subtracts from the GDP. Again, not necessarily. Spending on new home construction, meanwhile, rose a scant 1.3%. And what they're saying and blaming it on is severe weather. But is it? My understanding is that there's a lot of homes that are still in inventory and for sale, and that what they're doing is holding a lot of them off to keep the prices, artificially high. So there's a lot more to this than just the quick article from MarketWatch that says, and what it reflects is a lot of assumptions about the economy that may or may not be true. The Federal Reserve, true to form, has come out with a rosy scenario of their own, saying, you know, we expect the economy to pick up after growth ground to a virtual halt in the first quarter, and we're still open to an interest rate increase. Again, I don't understand what the Fed is doing, and I there's a lot of people that don't understand what the Fed is doing. Mainly, they're trying to exit this quantitative easing thing, and they really want to raise rates. And you know, then we get into that whole question of interest rates and money lending and things that I'm out of my element on. But the real question, and you know, one of the key questions here is, and you're going to start hearing this: we need a weak dollar. And I think one of the best things that I've seen in the last 6 months on this question of a strong dollar is Bob McTeer, who I think used to be one of the Fed governors, who wrote that, you know, here's the thing about a rising or declining dollar. It affects different groups in the economy differently. A rising dollar relative to the currencies of our trading partners generally makes our imports cheaper to our consumers, and make their imports cheaper to our consumers and our exports more expensive to foreign buyers. And it has an effect on that type of business. To make a long story short, what he basically says is that in a robust economy, a strong dollar actually acts as a strong, you know, force, because what it does is generally raise the living standard in the country, with the strong currency. The problem is we don't have a strong economy, and Bob McTeer makes that very clear, that it's hard to say that the U.S. economy is, quote-unquote, anything but robust. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? In other words, which came first, the unhealthy economy and a strong dollar, or the strong dollar and an unhealthy economy? It's not necessarily that our dollar is strong. It's that it's strong in comparison to other currencies, because all the central banks, the Bank of Japan, the euro, all the big and small central banks in the world are printing money like mad in an effort to dig their way out of, deflation. I told you, and I've told you many, many times, that the thing that these people fear the most is deflation, not because deflation should be feared. You know, if you really want to find some information about deflation, see what Steve Forbes has to say about deflation. See what John Tamney has to say about deflation. There's deflations to fear and deflation not to fear. What they fear is that the people who have borrowed money to build buildings, whether it's China or the United States, or to create businesses to, you know, build on debt, are terrified that deflation will make those debts harder to repay. Because what happens when prices go down is, if you borrow at a certain rate and you borrow a certain amount of money, when prices go down, the dollar's worth more, and so paying that money back is more difficult because it's harder to get the dollars to pay for. So they, you know, acquiring lots and lots of debt looks great when there's inflation. When there's deflation, it doesn't look so great. And I think this ridiculous 2% target that the Federal Reserve has of inflation is designed to make sure that, at least to a certain degree, people's debts crater. You know, wouldn't you rather borrow $1 million in 1910 and pay it back with $1990 dollars, right? Wouldn't you rather borrow $1 million in 1999 and pay it back with inflated, you know, 2004 dollars? That's the whole game with this, with borrowing and debt and corporate debt, and not just corporate debt, but state debt, whether it's the individual states or the federal governments or the governments across the world. So central bankers are scared of deflation because it will kill a lot of these people who have borrowed a great deal of money, whether it's companies or states that have borrowed a ton of money. And you're going to start hearing people talking about how we need to have a weaker dollar. You're going to hear that a lot. I've been in a lot of situations where, I've heard the whole arguments for sound money and money based on gold and silver and a strong dollar versus a weak dollar. I think what Bob McTeer said is probably the best thing. But I can't make head or tails of those arguments. I mean, I understand them when I'm hearing them. I find it difficult, if not impossible, to make them. Probably because I hear all sides in my head, so it's hard for me to think about it long enough to say this is what we should do. I tend to favor a metals-based currency because it is more sound. I could be wrong about that, and there are people that disagree vehemently about that. But it's something that should be in the economic package of discussion for 2016. And in a couple of minutes, I'll tell you why, what and why I think we should, what we need to do, you can think about whether you agree with it or not. But I got to tell you about xgovernmentcars.com. First of all, xgovernmentcars.com was going to move. And there was some discussion of that. And Ed ended up buying the building that X Government Cars is in at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. I've talked about it for years. And so they were shut down during the holidays. They're reopened. It is now the grand reopening event at xgovernmentcars.com. The bottom line is Ed has a line through experience. He has been able to get nicer, newer vehicles. And we're talking about Chargers. We're talking about Impalas, next-gen 4s, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. These are, you know, fleet-maintained government vehicles. And when you have somebody that knows how to find them and get the good ones, that's really worth looking at. The other thing is, if you're in the market for one of these cars, and I now have had four of them, including the ambulance, they're great values. But the main thing is, if you need a work truck or you need a car, great financing is available for all levels of credit, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They will get you qualified. Basically, everybody's approved at xgovernmentcars.com. They only carry one owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles, as I said. And the thing is, people are starting to sell these cars in other places because there's a great demand for them. And people, you know, you just don't know what you're getting at other dealers. The only place to get really good deals on these cars is xgovernmentcars.com because of the selection and because of the experience involved. So let's review. First of all, cash deals from owner Ed Johnson, so you can negotiate. Second, a three-day satisfaction guarantee. Third, financing for all levels of credit. You can apply online 24/7 safely and securely, and you can go to xgovernmentcars.com and check out what they've got at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. I think I've seen Yukons, Expeditions. They will have the new Ford Police sedan. Eventually, they will have the new Ford Police SUV. Both of them are awesome. Chevy Impalas, Chargers, whatever you need. Don't forget the grand reopening event on now at
xgovernmentcars.com.
Everything is better at
xgovernmentcars.com.
Now, you'll have to decide whether you think the economy is better or not. It depends on what business you're in. It depends on what you're doing. It depends on what your business is, if you're in business for yourself. It depends on what your job is. I have sensed a slowdown for a lot of reasons. I think I'm probably the first person that said, don't assume that cheaper gas is going to be better. You know, one of the biggest lies that they told us was that cheaper gas was going to result in an economic boom because the consumer was going to spend the money. Now they're saying, well, consumers are actually saving their money, and they're not, surprisingly enough, we don't know why, but they're not spending it. Well, obviously, people collectively who are not stupid know more than the people who claim to be the smartest men in the world and women in the world running our economy just can't understand what's going on with all of the data. You know, I would look to the people and say, the fact that they're holding back is an indication of how things are. And why would you think people are holding back? Well, I think a lot of people have been downsized. They have part-time jobs. Or if they don't have a job, one of the persons in the family, the man and woman, one of them, or man and man, or woman and woman, one of them's working and one of them isn't. A lot of people are doing freelance work, which is feast or famine. So they're not spending the quote-unquote dividend from gas. The other thing is I think the chief problem in the economy is that the people, the architects of things, believe that the secret, the key to economic growth is getting the consumer to spend money. And I think that's really the core of what's going on. You've got a lot of people who believe you have to stimulate, you have to prime the pump to get people to go out and spend money. And that's really not the problem in our economy. The problem in our economy is business formation. Businesses are investing in themselves. They're buying back their stock. Banks are borrowing money at 0% and investing it in the market, which is artificially inflated through manipulations and things like quantitative easing and so forth. And they're not lending it out to people to start businesses because nobody knows the economy's not growing up fast enough. It's not growing fast enough to create enough upward draft for small businesses and medium-sized businesses to really start expanding and giving people jobs. So the problem is on the supply side. It's not on the demand side. They have been trying to stimulate demand for 8 years. And get ready, because you're going to hear Reformicon Republicans and you're going to hear Democrats talking about what we need to do is we need to build more infrastructure. And where does that go? Well, I'll give you an example. In the state of Minnesota, they just passed an increase in the gas tax for the state. Now, the Senate passed it. I don't know what's going to happen with the House. But if it gets to the governor, I'm sure he'll sign it. And it's so interesting to me because we're going to stimulate the economy by building things. You know, we just had a huge bonding bill, same kind of thing, where the idea is the state will build things and it will stimulate the economy. Except what that generally does is stimulate the economy in a very thin band of specialized types of businesses. It doesn't necessarily trickle down to the rest of the world. And so the other thing is if you're raising the gas tax, you're literally taking money out of the under end of the pool. So you're taking water out of one end of the pool and expecting the water level to rise because you're taking water out over here and putting it in over there. That's what's kind of going on with this. And it's been going on for a long time. This is nothing new. So I think that's the chief problem. There isn't enough discussion of what do you do to stimulate the supply side. And this is where, you know, Reaganomics and Laffer comes in, and lots of people don't like hearing that because they say it's wrong and it didn't help the economy. It's hugely debatable. But I would just put it to you this way. What we need is we need business formation, and we need kind of tax and regulation policies and spending policies at state and local and federal governments that allow businesses, medium and small businesses, and individuals to plan for the future successfully. If they know how things are going to be in 10 years or 5 years, then they will plan accordingly, and you might see them start spending. If we keep relying on the consumer, the consumer to me is exhausted. Not only are they exhausted, but today's consumer is very savvy. They will go to Costco instead of Byerly's, let's say, or Safeway. They'll go someplace and they'll buy in bulk when things are on sale. They'll use coupons. And if you have a family and you don't do that, you're just not going to have as much money left. I said early on when gas prices went down, first of all, I was pleased to see gas prices go down. There's a lot of reasons for why we shouldn't worry about it. The American energy industry, and particularly the oil industry, as I said in another podcast, is able to adjust effectively to price increases and decreases. We're now a major swing oil producer in the world. So like anything else, there's negatives and positives to it. Paying less for gas is great for people who are consumers. It's not so great for the oil companies, but it won't put them in a position that they were in 25 or 30 years ago when we had another type of oil bust. This will be easier for them to cope with. It means they're going to lay people off, and you're seeing that in Texas, and you're seeing it in North Dakota, but it doesn't mean, an absolute, we turn the oil industry into a bowling alley at this point because it can't be managed. But there's good news and bad news associated with it. So I think what we need to think about is what we need, and you hear there's an awful lot of gimmicks out there. One of them is we need 4% economic growth. I got news for you. We've had bad economic growth, whether it's 2% or 1% or 0% or negative 1% or 2.5% economic growth for way too long. We need to recoup what we lost, and we need to recoup what we lost in terms of jobs. We need to recoup what we lost in terms of GDP growth over those years so that we can continue to grow in this country. Even though it's a $16 trillion economy, it's a $16 trillion federal debt as well. So we need to grow the economy to address that. You know, people worry about the debt, and this is where the quote of "don't worry about debt" came from. If you can grow your economy significantly every year, you don't really have to worry about the federal debt as much. I'm not a big fan and a supporter of, you know, huge amounts of federal debt, especially when most of the time it's used to spend being spent on nonsense. But you know, if the economy is growing fast enough, you don't have to worry about that. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we need to recoup our losses. So what we need is a lot more than 4% growth. We need 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever the doctor ordered, statistically, quarters of 6+% economic growth. And you will start to see small businesses expand into medium-sized businesses and medium-sized businesses expand into large businesses. And you will see some of this money on Wall Street and in other places in the banks broken loose. There are some things that we can do to address economic growth, and these candidates really should be talking about it. First of all, we need to fix the tax code. The tax code in this country is completely unmanageable. We've got effectively a 39% tax rate for corporations, and what they're doing is taking their money overseas and merging with overseas companies to avoid taxation. It's a very complex tax code that benefits anybody who can afford a tax preparer most of the time, and it's been turned into class warfare. You know, we want to increase taxes on the rich and decrease taxes on the quote unquote middle class. The problem is, if you increase taxes on the rich, then you're going to see less capital formation and less investment that gets out to the small and medium sized businesses. What we need is some kind of flat tax, whether it is a 2-bracket flat tax or a 3-bracket flat tax or a flat tax period. We need a flat tax, and it's not going to be 15%. It's going to have to be a lot more than that because of all the government spending. And we need to reduce taxes overall for corporations and for individuals at all levels. Moreover, we need to stop spending so much money at the state, federal, and local levels. We need to get control of state, federal, and local budgets. And in my world, that means right to work, and it means Act 10 type legislation all over the country, so that these municipalities can get control of their budgets and their pensions and what they pay their people and work rules and so forth. Those are things that can be done and that need to be done, and that's what people need to be talking about. I would ignore the inequality arguments, and I would ignore the arguments about free trade. I would ignore all of the arguments about things that really amount to distractions, because we're not getting the things done that will grow the economy. I don't expect that there's going to be, you know, a rebound in the second quarter, probably of 3%. They will ballyhoo it and talk about how they've defeated the enemy. They've defeated the dragon of slow economic growth. And then we'll be back to 1% or 0.1% again, because we keep doing the same things. We keep hearing these politicians talk about infrastructure. And it works the same way at the national level. We were talking about Baltimore. Somebody wrote that they pumped billions of dollars into education and billions of dollars into city infrastructure to get people jobs, and apparently it didn't work. Well, why didn't it? Because those jobs are in a very tight, very small spectrum of employment, and they don't trickle down. They don't spread out. The benefits do not accrue to the general population. If you want the benefits to accrue to the general population, you have to do things on a broad base, and you have to make sure they know that they're permanent. Rebates don't work because people just hoard the money because they figure they're going to end up having to pay it back anyway. So if you look at the cost of Obamacare, if you look at the cost of entitlements increasing, if you look at more government spending, if you look at high levels of government regulation, which is another thing that needs to be undone, is the Gordian knot of the federal and state governments. Every year we pass thousands and thousands of new regulations to make it more difficult to do banking, more difficult to do any kind of construction, more difficult to do. I mean, it's ridiculous for anyone in business, especially small businesses. And the effect is that small businesses are prevented from growing into medium businesses because the large businesses are using their cronies in government to prevent the small businesses and medium-sized businesses from getting anywhere. Great example, of course, is towns that are trying to outlaw Airbnb because your aunt and uncle are renting out your great-grandmother's apartment after she died and getting $200 or $300 every time there's a Super Bowl. We can't have that. That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of that, and there's a lot of that in all kinds of businesses, and there's a lot of very sophisticated efforts along that front. One of them is net neutrality. It is a great example of a sophisticated crony capitalist move, which is designed to benefit the existing businesses, not the upstarts. And I could go on and on about that, but I won't. So when we think about the economy, I hope things are going better for you. I don't think we can get by in 2%, 3%, and 4% economic growth. It'd be nice to see 4% for a quarter, but eventually all of this government spending and focus on the consumer reaches a point where it has lower and lower and lower levels of return. And there are storm clouds. You know, China is a big if. There's a lot of problems in China with speculation, with debt. The debt to GDP ratio in China is very high. Many people believe they're cooking the books. If you see a huge recession or depression in China, it's going to be world-changing, and it will happen suddenly, and there are going to be huge effects because the pact that the Communist Party has with the people of China is basically unspoken and unwritten, but we will rule as long as we can deliver 7%+ economic growth to you. The problem with that is that they aren't doing that. So there's that. Latin America is not doing well right now. Russia is not doing well right now. Japan is bankrupt demographically and monetarily. So there's a lot of storm clouds economically in the world. And these recessions happen to cauterize those wounds, to cauterize the mistakes and the bad businesses. The problem in 2008 is we didn't let the bad businesses go out of business. We bailed them out. We bailed the whole country out with a massive stimulus. And I think we're suffering the knock-on effects of doing that. Did it ease the pain? You know, we probably would have had a V-shaped recovery if they'd done nothing. We would have probably had a V-shaped recovery, and I think we wouldn't have been hearing anything about new normal or demography or any of that stuff. I think the intervention by panicked officials, whether it's Hank Paulson and George W. Bush or President Obama not wasting a crisis to enact all of his social plans and his government is a solution plans, I don't think it was good for the country. So what we have to look for in 2016 is we need to elect people that really understand how to get small businesses and individuals back on track. And I'm looking to hear that from candidates, and I'm not hearing it. I'm hearing Reformicon saying we're going to increase taxes on the rich and decrease taxes on the middle class. That's not a Republican concept, and it's a dumb idea. I'm hearing Jeb Bush say, it's all about 4% economic growth and more money for education and, things of that nature. And I'm hearing Hillary Clinton talk about inequality. And I don't know what Martin O'Malley is talking about, we're going to make the government more efficient, which is exactly what Obama said. And by the way, it's what Nixon said. So what we need is somebody that really understands business and really understands how to get the government off the back of the American people. And we might get somewhere, but don't expect big things, and don't buy this rosy scenario that everything's going to get better in the next a few quarters in this country, because the we haven't changed any of the policies. These are the policies that have given us this moribund growth, and it's a real problem for all of us, because what you end up doing is businesses is you're really working on niches, you're working on trying to figure out how to make money, and yet you're not making much money. And you're really subject to the vagaries of what's going on. I mean, the manufacturing guys are having a hard time because, obviously, the stronger dollar is hurting them. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's hurting them because a strong dollar does not benefit a weak economy, and we have a weak economy, even though the president and all of his supporters and all the people that think that if they push a button, it's going to make a difference, think the economy is better. So I'll leave you with those thoughts, and I've run kind of long, but that's kind of where I'm at tonight on this beautiful, warm, late April night on what's going on with the economy. So two sponsors in this podcast. Definitely want to thank Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Greg Ryan, thank you. And don't forget, get your AC checked for the global warming summer that is coming. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for four generations, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And of course, also xgovernmentcars.com. The grand reopening event is on. Remember, the main thing is all the selection, great cars, discounts from Ed Johnson himself, the owner. He knows how to find good cars and he gets them. They're great deals. And the financing is great because anybody qualifies. Plus, they'll take cash. So check it out, xgovernmentcars.com. And let me grab the bullhorn.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Let me also thank Mad Case Studios for digitally sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. They specialize in quality original automotive artwork. A lot of people want to have, they have a favorite car, they have a grandparent that had a great favorite car, and they want a piece of artwork that reflects that. My mom used to do real estate paintings, and people really like them. And this is exactly what that is from a car perspective, in addition to all the other amazing stuff Mad K does. They're going to be at a lot of antique studios, and I mean a lot of antique shows, like the one at the State Fair this year. Go to the banner, Mad K Studios, and click on it. It takes you to their Facebook page. You can see what they do. And click on all the banners for more information about the sponsors of the Bob Davis podcast. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and of course, Blog Talk Radio, which I'll be telling you more about in the future. Thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm saving that up for diesel fuel so we can hit the road and cover election 2016 as well as the next big breaking story. By the way, I would have gone to Baltimore, but the truck was in the shop, so I can't do that, and I need more money for diesel fuel. So I appreciate the donations for sure, and thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting and following Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and thanks for your donations again at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm going to sit here and drink my coffee.